Welcome back, everyone, to the eighth episode of Aspire, the Leadership Development Podcast, where we will be discussing the visions, inspiration, and experiences from top educational leaders. My name is Joshua Stamper, and you can connect with me on Twitter or on Instagram at @Joshua_Stamper. This week, I'm so excited to be joined by Brad Gustafson, an elementary principal in Wayzata, Minnesota, national speaker, co-host of the podcast Unearth Ed on BAM Radio, and best-selling author of Renegade Leadership. Brad, thank you so much for joining us today.
Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderful.
I got to ask you, double underscore in the Twitter handle?
I know. I got to be unique.
That's impressive.
All right, to begin the show, I'd love to hear your personal leadership journey and how you became an administrator.
Oh, great. So I don't know how stop me, Josh, if I get too personal. The story behind the story, and I think I shared this like 15 years ago, and some teacher friend said, don't ever share that story again. So this is like a material, Josh, not saying it's
awesome.
Good, but it's like the inside scoop. So when I was teaching, I wanted to do a good job and I wanted to serve kids, and my heart was in it. And I have to preface it because this next part's going to sound kind of bad. I remember driving around this smaller town where I was teaching second grade and seeing the principal's car and like instinctively tapping the brakes, almost as if she was a state trooper or police officer or something. And just thinking like, what is that about? Right. Just totally out of context. Why would I tap my brakes when I see that my principal's car? So it's just an interesting thing. And the reason that I share that is there's a human element to that. And she was an incredible principal and leader and saw something in me that, quite frankly, I didn't see in myself. But I went from this, I don't want to say fearful, Josh, but just very conscientious. Did I say that right? Can you help me out here, Josh?
Conscientious. No, 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 I can't even say it. It's like a bad golf swing.
this is like the most fun I've had on a podcast. So she helped me go from kind of that teacher, and she invested in me, developed me, and gave me a shot to the point where, you know, I wasn't tapping the brakes anymore. I was hitting the accelerator, but not on the road anymore. Now we're talking more about education. So it was her, and her name was Jan Fisher. And I feel like I should give credit where credit's due. But she's the one who came to my classroom one afternoon, and she had a brochure in her hand and said, Brad, I think you'd be good at this. It was a leadership development program, principal program. And my initial reaction, I don't think I said it out loud, but I was just thinking, like, am I not doing a good job? Was kind of my thinking, because I was loving what I was doing. I ended up taking the classes partly because I have like I'm in love with learning, and you can probably relate to this. It's one of the most expensive hobbies on the planet, right? If you do it the university route. But I took those classes without ever intending to become a principal. I was loving teaching, and I thought I'd just keep learning. And lo and behold, as I learned more and grew my skills, I did start to think about like some of the difference I was trying to make as a varsity soccer coach and as a teacher in investing in kids' character and things like that. The idea of trying to do that at a campus level or on a little bit different scale, it appealed to me, and working with others is something I enjoy too. So long story short, I did take the plunge and applied, and I will never forget the fact that had it not been for Jan Fisher, my previous principal, who I used to tap the brakes at, I wouldn't be having the chance to serve in the school I am now. And although I'd be relishing my work as a teacher, I just really appreciate her kind of taking that leap of faith in me and throwing the pamphlet my way.
So what do you think was the most difficult part of transitioning from a teacher to an administrator?
The most difficult part, I'll give you two quick answers. One is really cheesy. I remember working really long hours in the summer, and that's no different. You know, teachers do that too, but it was mostly on the computer, and I wasn't accustomed to as much, you know, sitting at the desk looking at master schedules and things like that. My neck, I mean, I thought I was going to die after the first 2 weeks of staring down at a laptop, and I did it a little excessively because I didn't know what I was doing, so I was less efficient at everything. So as I'm working on the master schedule, preparing for the upcoming year, it wasn't just during the day. It was then I'd go home and sit on the couch and stare at the laptop and try to crack this riddle or mystery that was the master schedule. So it really, my neck was not in the shape. Did you have that too, by the way?
With the master schedule?
No, not a master schedule, but did you notice muscles in your neck just because the nature of your work changed a little bit? Did that? No.
Not
we'll
really.
We'll strike that for the record too. Okay. I was going to say, maybe I just need to work out a little bit more, but I don't want to give people the idea that I was sitting behind a desk all the time. I'm just saying over the summer when you're trying to get a schedule done in Excel, I mean, that's kind of a necessity, right? You don't write it in the sand. And then the easy answer, maybe a little bit funnier, painful one, but the real honest answer is I'm not a political person by nature. I mean, I just try to see the best in people and try to do what I do for altruistic reasons. And I assume everyone else is doing the same. What I wasn't expecting was that there's this kind of, and I can't think of a better word, so I'll just call it what comes to mind. There's kind of a political nature to school leadership. And it's not even bad. It doesn't have to be bad, but you do have to be aware of different dynamics than I was used to as a homeroom teacher. And again, I'm not trying to insinuate that politics weren't part of teaching. What I'm just trying to say, it was just at a different level. And there was a lot of learning on how to serve in that capacity. And I don't think I've had some conversations with some other people, and I don't think it's unique. This isn't an indictment on any particular school or district. I just think it's a reality of the job. More people to serve, more constituents. And with that, I think comes more needs and different, sometimes competing expectations.
What characteristics do you believe every leader should possess?
The characteristics that I think are really important, and this was a goal and a challenge all rolled into one, but you know, I'm assuming all teachers love and thoroughly adore hanging out with kids and trying to make a difference. I tried to carry that with me to the role of the principal. And I've heard friends in the roles that they transition to, they try to, if that opportunity doesn't naturally exist, they try to redefine the role a little bit. I'm not saying I did anything that extreme, but I did prioritize connecting with kids and trying to find ways to do that in a meaningful way and integrate that into my workflow. So as far as a characteristic, I would say really child-centered, but not in terms of how an adult might assume. You know, it's easy probably for you and I to think we know what's best for kids, but unless you really talk to them and listen, probably listen more than talk, I mean, that's how you really can have a better sense of what's best for kids. So I think that's probably my overarching passion and belief and characteristic at this point in my career. And I think it was back then, just really making sure that the reason I show up to serve each day and try to support the people I'm, you know, get to work next to is to make sure that kids have really great days and learn lots and learn skills, not just to succeed, you know, quote unquote, academically, but also as people and future brothers and sisters and, you know, aunts and uncles and all those things.
And as a teacher, we're very focused on the students. As an administrator, we now have to branch out and work with adults. Mm-hmm. So how do you create a culture of improvement and growth with your staff?
How do I create it? I don't know that I create much of anything. I think one thing that I do that I think is helpful is when I make mistakes and when I get feedback that I maybe don't want to get, I try to really listen and reflect. And just to be super honest with you, there are times where I'll hear an answer or get feedback that's either hurtful or anonymous or presented in a manner that's maybe not how I would want it to be presented. There are always decision points, and I've caught myself having to make these decision points. It's like, Brad, you can get caught up on blaming the person, whether it's a staff member, a parent, a student, whoever, a wife, for how they are delivering the message, or you can actually be intent on improving yourself and gleaning the learning that you need to glean to grow as a person and to be able to serve more effectively. And I'm not saying I'm perfect at this, Josh, but I know that when I'm deliberate or intentional about, you know, for lack of a better word, kind of humbling myself and trying to get at what I need to hear is really helpful, and I improve. And when I improve, I can't help but think it creates the conditions where it's safe for others to improve. Just a little microcosm of how this plays out even. And this one doesn't really involve me, but I was at a meeting today, and our school is on a restitution journey. We're very excited about that. But at the training, we were talking, and there's your typical agreement, right, that happens in Minnesota. I don't know how it is in Texas, but people are generally pretty nice and agreeable. But one of our staff members said something after somebody had shared. She said something like, you know, I don't necessarily agree with that. And she just said it with great tone and intentions. And it launched us into a really deep conversation. And I just was struck at how lucky I am to get to be a part of that. And I think I try my best to model that too. But I think we create a culture where we can improve by being able to have honest conversations and make sure that we have trust. And I think in Five Dysfunctions of a Team, they talk about if you don't have healthy conflict, you're probably not growing, at least at the rate you could be. So maybe that's something that I try to support. And you, in order to be able to create trust and support that healthy environment, you got to be able to take criticism, I think.
Every year it's a little bit different, but I'm just curious as to what innovative initiative you've established this current year.
The first thing is really simple, and it's trying to be as learner-centered as possible. And I think I maybe started by talking about this too, but just looking at things through the eyes of kids and not through like the eyes necessarily of tradition or what I think should happen, but really when I show up each day and when we show up each day, what do the kids we're serving need us to ask about? What traditions do they need us to champion, right? Mm-hmm. What elements of culture do they need us to champion? What do they need us to question? What do they need us to stop? What do they need us to listen to? What do they need us to evolve, iterate, et cetera, et cetera? And I just feel like with that mindset or way of thinking, there's a different urgency attached or associated with the work in the spirit of vulnerability. I feel like sometimes I myself can give myself too many chances. Like, you know, if this isn't perfect, we'll give it a go next year. Or even if we don't launch, you know, well, maybe we'll start that next year. And the reality is kids, you know, they're only in school so long and things are changing so quickly that I feel like almost to catch up, we have to almost constantly be operating outside our comfort zone a little bit. So an example of that, we do this thing called a staff versus students basketball game. It's not an uncommon thing for schools to do, and it's just electric. You know, kids love it. They love playing their teachers. We have handicaps associated with the staff to make it a little more fair. So it might be teachers wearing mittens for a quarter, you know, to shoot the basketball, or carrying backpacks weighed down with books, you know, where the kids assign teachers homework, kind of, just to make the game more interesting and balance it out a little bit. So we've done that, and it continues to go well. But then we also know we want to iterate and innovate to realize meaningful change. So one of the things our team is working on is creating a culture of literacy. And a culture of literacy doesn't just happen. You actually have to create the conditions where kids love books and talk about the books they're reading and hear from their teachers and principal the books they're reading and book talks and all of these things, right? I mean, that's the soil where these things grow. So we basically, mm-hmm. our team combined, we called it a book slam, kind of a play on slam dunk and book reading, you know? So it was the kids got their jerseys like they always have, but instead of just a basketball and our school logo, it was a basketball and riffed with a book. It was kind of a cool, it actually looked kind of professional. We had a design company to do it, but we had a little mini pop-up book fair outside. We had kids do book talks at halftime. There were some reading related challenges and handicaps. I mean, just it was combining two passions, right? What we did was we applied innovation to a best practice to go where the vision is taking us, right? To serve kids and create this culture of literacy. And that, I forget what the question was, but that's all I got.
No, that was a wonderful initiative. I think that's a huge component, taking a child interest and then mm-hmm. connecting it to something that's so valuable with reading.
Right. Because I think often leaders and by leaders, I mean, everyone at a school really can explain things away or do what we think needs to be done or keep things. But when we really, really pay attention to what kids are choosing to do outside of school, that's a signal for us, or it should be. And if those things are seen as separate from school, I think we're in trouble. So we have kids. I mean, one of the reasons we did this book slam was we have kids who love basketball, but they're not in love with reading yet. So we're just trying to mash passions together so that kids can see like these things all work together, and people can have more than one passion too.
you are extremely active on social media. You are a national speaker. You have your own podcast. How did you find your voice beyond the campus?
I think it kind of goes back to almost the Jan Fisher, the Mrs. Fisher principal thing, the invitation. And I get this mixed up because it was a while ago, but I feel like I was either at an ISTE conference and our tech director kind of gave us all a challenge to tweet something before it was done, or maybe I was at a Todd Whitaker keynote long ago and somebody invited and mentioned there's power and value in learning from others and kind of making the world a little bit smaller. And I went in and I didn't fully understand it. And I just went from there. But it did start with some type of invitation. Sorry, it's a little fuzzy, but it came from somebody. And I've tried, you know, Josh, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you because it helps me reflect on my journey. But I've tried to pay these things forward a little bit and invite people. And I'm not just talking about social media, but even in leadership arenas. I hope teachers and principals and people who are listening know, getting an invitation for something special, not a staff email like, hey, anyone want to join this committee, but kind of a face-to-face or something personal saying, I think you'd be good. I think you might enjoy it. I think you might grow and bring something that other people can't. It really does matter. And, you know, that's the story of my life. And in little ways, I try to kind of make that go full circle.
Which kind of leads me to my next question. For those who are aspiring to become something that they're not, what advice do you have for them?
Well, my visceral response without even thinking about it is figure out who you are first. You know, it's not necessarily about taking the step or what step you're going to take, but it's about the person on the steps. And what I mean by that is oftentimes leaders, teacher leaders, principal leaders, I think we're pretty reflective. The danger in that, that's a very good thing, but the danger is we can be really self-critical and beat ourselves up and run unhealthy scripts in our minds. Like, boy, did I botch that. What an idiot. Shouldn't have said that, et cetera, et cetera. If we were to spend more time reflecting on, you know, what are the gifts that I can bring realistically? Like, how might I support this team in a way that's different than what other people could do? And what am I passionate about? What fills my bucket? Because if you're going to be in the business of filling others' bucket, investing in their capacity, serving them, you've got to find a way to fill your bucket too, right? And so that's why maybe this goes back to the connecting with others thing on social media or just being a learner. I'm constantly learning that fills my bucket. I know, or I don't know, I haven't arrived, but I feel like I know some of the core things that I enjoy, and I'm sure I'll discover more the longer I live, but I do know the things that matter to me, and I make sure to spend time in those things instead of just looking at deficits and trying to fix myself or maybe even others. I really do look for my strengths and I look for other people's strengths. So I think anyone looking at the next step, don't just try to be like other people or leaders you admire. Look at the gifts you already have, you know, how God hardwired you to fill the role that only you can do, and don't ever shy away from those things. And it'd be just, you know, the weird thing about this is it's so simple. It'd be the same thing we would tell a student. You were created for such a time as this, and don't try to be somebody else. And I think even being on social media, I have to remind myself of that too. Like, because you can get pretty tempted to compare yourself to people and their amazing writing and blogging and the other things they're doing. But if you just own the few gifts that you've been given and do the best you can with them, some pretty cool things can happen.
In closing, what do you think is the most joyful thing about being a leader?
There's a lot, Josh. There's so many. I'll just give one of the most joyful moments I had this year. And I think a big part of it is just seeing other people succeed, like real, genuine success. And probably it's even more joyful when it's a leap for them, right? Mm-hmm. And less mundane. But there was a really special one. We had a former Greenwood student who was selected to speak at our state's principal conference. And I don't know how many people were in the audience. Like, I would say hundreds of elementary principals. It's our biggest state principal conference. And this former Greenwood, where I get to work, kiddo went up there and just delivered. I thought he crushed it. And I overheard some other principals talking, and I don't know that they made the connection that he had attended school, but like saying he was one of the best, meaning comparing him to all the keynotes of the weekend, not just the TED style kind of Ignite 10-minute deals. And he was amazing. And that was, like, I still will carry that. I can picture myself in the audience, seeing him, talking to his mom after, knowing the hard work and prep he put into doing that. And I think that's amazing. And one of the reasons why it's so amazing is the fact that I know all his teachers, kindergarten through fifth grade, and what they did to invest in him and how they handed him the microphone and amplified his voice and ideas and all the things they did that put him on that stage. And none of us would have known that while he was in elementary school. But here's this young man who's doing that, and he just made us all proud.
For those who haven't read your amazing book, Renegade Leadership, I want to give you an opportunity to share out what that is all about.
Succinctly, I will say it's a book about instructional leadership for the digital age and pedagogy. And for me, you know, although it delves into all things digital, whether you're talking about drone technology or student blogging, et cetera, augmented reality, the pedagogy screams off the pages so that people can actually sense like how and why are we doing this? It's not about the what. And it's the same with leadership in the book. And actually, you know, I haven't really talked about this too much, but in the book, there are 10 leadership traits that are kind of woven in the DNA throughout. So while you're learning about technology and how to push yourself and amplify students' voices and learning, it's really this leadership journey. And some of the things are pedagogical precision is one of them. But then there are things like transparency. There's just things that if you're an aspiring leader, honestly, I think they could be helpful to meet kids where they're at right now. It's about creating, the subtitle is Creating Innovative Schools for Digital Age Students.
How can our listeners connect with you on social media?
Sure. Well, unfortunately, I don't have the double underscore going, but they can try me at Gustafson Brad. And my blog is called Adjusting Course, and it's www.bradgustafson.com. And there's quite a few resources on there and links to the podcast and all that stuff.
Please continue to check out the Aspire podcast on SoundCloud and iTunes and share your ratings and reviews. Don't forget to use the Aspire Lead hashtag as you continue the conversation on Twitter.